Okay, morning, everybody. Today's daf in Ksuvos is daf Lamed Beis. We're on Lamed Alf Amud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning the Zecher Nishmas Liba, Gabriela Bashmuel. We are in the middle of one of the basic circuits of Kimlei B'Rabbi Mineh. We know that the halacha is that given the choice between two punishments, so you go with the harsher of the two punishments. Based on the principle of Kimlei, which Gemara actually didn't set a source for it as of yet. We alluded to the source back in Rashi, but the halacha is that you give the harsher of the two punishments. And yesterday's daf was revolving around the idea of concurrency. In order to get an exemption from the lesser of the two punishments, so the two acts have to come concurrently with one another. So what we struggle to find is exact cases of concurrency, and we did it really in the context of carrying something for Amos and Rishos Rabbim, or throwing something for Amos and Rishos Rabbim. Where there, the Gemara says is that when you throw something for Amos and Rishos Rabbim, so the Akir and the Hanacha are considered one unit, and anything that happens during the course of that time is going to be considered concurrent, and therefore you're going to have an exemption of the lesser of the two. What about picking something to eat it? Is that going to be analogous? So the Gemara said yesterday, no, that's not analogous. When you pick something up to eat it, that's not the same as throwing an item from point A to point B, and the Gemara gave the various explanations, two explanations in terms of why that should be. And based on those two explanations, the Gemara gave Nafkamina's practical differences. Then we quoted a brisa regarding stealing a wallet on Shabbos. The Gemara in Lamed Aleph towards the bottom talked about what would be the case if I were to carry a wallet. Steal a wallet from somebody's house on Shabbos. So the brisa says that if I pick it up and walk it out, so then I'm going to be chayv on Geneva. Because the Chilul Shabbos comes only when I cross the threshold of the house from the Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabin. But the Geneva occurs when I pick it up. What if I drag the wallet outside? So the Gemara says that's a perfect illustration of Kamlei B'Derabim Mineh. Because the Chilul Shabbos and the Geneva occur simultaneously, meaning at the crossing of the threshold. So the Gemara went on to discuss that case in more detail, and what the Gemara resolved, and this is what we got to, the point we got to yesterday, is that the Braisa could have drawn a distinction about making a significant break, in other words, pausing before walking outside versus not pausing walking outside, but the Gemara says, but the Braisa wanted to teach us the Chiddush of Megarer, that when I drag it out, so two things happen simultaneously. Number one, Chil Shabbos when I cross the threshold, and also Geneva occurs also when I cross the threshold. We are right in the middle of the flow of this discussion. So Sakadat Chamina. So let's pick it up. Yesterday, I'm going back just a little bit on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, about seven lines from the top of the Amud. So the Gemara goes on to explain the Havamina. Sakadat Chamina and Derech Hotzah B'Kach Kamash Malan. Dragging might not be considered a Hotzah. That's what I might have thought. The Gemara says no. Dragging a wallet out is in fact considered a Hotzah. Iva Mai. So Uva Mai. The Gemara goes on to clarify. Iba Ravrevei Orchehu. If we're talking about a large item that you're stealing, so that's normal. In other words, you don't pick up a large item, you drag it. And Iba Zutrei Lav Orchehu. And if it's a small wallet, so that's strange to drag it out, and you don't normally drag it out, and that would be a deviant way from doing something, and a abnormal way of doing something, which on Shabbos would not be chayiv. So the Gemara says, Ela b'mitzah. So the Gemara says, we're talking about something which is mid-size, a carry-on bag, if you will, where some people drag it, some people pick it up. Fine. And that would be a scenario in which you could pick it up, you could drag it, either way would be acceptable, and that's what the Bryce is describing. Or the Afkalahecham. Okay, this is new, we haven't seen this yesterday. The Gemara now is going to try to now even further fine-tune the case of picking up the wallet, now when it's no longer a wallet, it's kind of like a carry-on bag, picking up the carry-on bag and bringing it outside in Shabbos, but in the latter case, dragging it outside in Shabbos. Now, when we say outside, what is exactly outside? Leicha. Idaf ke l'Rishos Rabbim, Mr. Shabbos Ika, Issa Geneva Leicha. So the Gemara says, are we talking about bringing it out to Rishos Rabbim? Meaning that the moment that you take a step outside the house, so what's immediately outside Rishos Rabbim? So the Gemara says, fine. I understand how you violated Shabbos, and you did a very good job violating Shabbos. I mean, good job. You understand. You were successful in violating Shabbos. So it's not good. But you were successful in violating Shabbos. You went from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. That's fine. But Geneva, but you didn't steal as of yet. Meaning in order to steal, what needs to happen? Either you need to pick it up, or you need to bring it into your Rosh Hashanah. Bring it into Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, it's a public area. So you didn't steal as of yet. So So the Gemara says, now, if let's say immediately after the house, what else is there? Let's say another domain. Let's say it's your domain. So the Gemara says, that's great. So you violated the Geneva, as you brought the item now into your domain, into your property, but you haven't violated Shabbos. Shabbos requires you to go from Rishos Yachid to Rishos Harabim. So the Gemara says, let's see if let's see Rishos Harabim. So the Gemara says, okay, so the case must be as follows. Immediately outside the house is not the Rishos Harabim, but see the Rishos Harabim. I guess we can call it a sidewalk. It's not exactly the best way to illustrate it, but basically, it's the side of a Rishos Harabim, side of a Rishos Harabim. We're going to just see in a moment, may or may not have the status of Rishos Harabim. And the Gemara says, Uchaman. So the Gemara says, okay, but we need to make that point clear. It may or may not have the status of Rishos Harabim. That's an important point. Meaning, if it does have the status of Rishos Harabim, so we're back to our conundrum. Meaning, on one hand, you violated Shabbos. On the other hand, you haven't stolen the item yet. And if it's not a Rishos Harabim, so then we're also back to the same conundrum. Meaning, so you didn't violate Shabbos, and you violated thievery. So, Iker, Rabbi Elazar, Dami, Tzita, Rishos Harabim, Kirishos Harabim, Dami. Gemara articulates exactly this question. If we go like Rabbi Eliezer, and he says that the side of Rishos Harabim has the same status as Rishos Harabim, so then Yisr Shabbos Ika, Yisr Geneva Leika. So fine, so you violated Shabbos, but you haven't stolen. And Ika Rabbanan, and if we go like the Chacham Dami Tzid Rishos Harabim, Lavki Rishos Harabim Damu, that Tzid Rishos Harabim is not the same as Rishos Harabim, Yisr Geneva Ika, Yisr Shabbos Leika. Fine, you stole, but you didn't violate Shabbos. And again, we're looking for a way to explain the Brisa. The Brisa is trying to explain concurrency. Where exactly do we see that Shabbos and Geneva come simultaneously? So La'olam ki Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, look, we're going to go like Rabbi Eliezer, who has an idea of Tzidei Rishos Harabim. V'chi amar Rabbi Eliezer, Tzidei Rishos Harabim ki Rishos Harabim Adami. And it's true that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the side of the Rishos Harabim has the status of Rishos Harabim. And therefore, you're going to violate Shabbos. But even though that's true, he doesn't give the side of the street full Rishos Harabim status. Hani mili li'inyin chiyuv de Shabbos. As it relates to Shabbos, the side of the street is considered the street. Why? Because, let's think about it. Why does the Rishos Harabim have a status of Rishos Harabim? It's because of the flow of traffic. Right? Flow of traffic is one of the defining points of Rishos Harabim. It's interesting. When we talk about Rishos Harabim and Shabbos, I don't want to get too much into it now, but generally speaking, the Gemara gives linear measurements. It's got to be 16 amas wide. It's got to run straight through the middle of the city. The Gemara never talks about the amount of people on it. Tosfos talks about it. It's often heated debate in terms of whether or not you need people on it. You don't need people on it. But generally speaking, though, again, it's not directly in the Gemara, but we say Rishos Harabim is because of the people on it, right? 600,000 people walking on it daily. Again, admittedly, that point is not in the Gemara. But still, the idea is that Rishos Harabim, part of its definition is its flow of traffic. That's part of what makes Rishos Harabim a Rishos Harabim. So what the Gemara is saying over here is as follows. Look, Rabbi Eliezer says that not only is the main traffic considered Rishos Harabim, but if there's congestion, and if people have to now go to the side of the road, that also has the status of Rishos Harabim. So those areas which admittedly are not normally traversed, but if they're there to relieve congestion, so that also has the status of Rishos Harabim as it relates to Shabbos. Avale inyan mikne kane. However, if you want to make a kinyan in that area, you could do that. Generally speaking, there are not people there. So as it relates to Shabbos, it's a Rishos Harabim. As it relates to kinyanim, we won't give it the description of a Rishos Harabim. You can't make a kinyan in the Rishos Harabim. I'm not talking about holding an item. Holding an item, you can make a kinyan anywhere. Talking about putting an item in that area and calling that area now your area, your domain. Can't do that in Rishos Harabim, but you can do that in an off to the side area. For kinyanim, this is considered an off-to-the-side area. My time at the halosh chicharabim, because the Gemara points out, there aren't people that are generally there. Okay, ad kan, that takes us to the end of now. Now we have successfully explained the second half of the braisa. There is a scenario of concurrency. A person drags a carry-on luggage outside of the house. So how are you going to be violating the Shabbos and being a ganav at the same time? The Gemara says, just like what we described. We're bringing it out to Tzidei Rishos Harabim. We're holding like Rabbi Eliezer that Tzidei Rishos Harabim is Kirishos Harabim, but with a limitation that only gets a status legabi Shabbos, but not legabi kinyanim, and that the Gemara says is how we arrived at the case of concurrency. Let's go on. And then, okay, so that means now that those concurrency, so kam le b'derabimine, because you violated the Shabbos, so now you're not gonna get hit with the obligation to pay. Rav Ashi Amar Kigon Shitzir V'yad Olamata B'Shosha V'Kiblom. So Rav Ashi says, can I give what would hopefully be a much simpler explanation of the Braisa? The Braisa says, I drag it out and I did two things at the same time. I violated Shabbos and I made a kinyan as well. And let's not be as fancy as we just were, saying that what was immediately outside the house was Sita Rishus Rabim, and we're holding like Rabbi Eliezer. But Rabbi Eliezer, someone says that only the Gabi Shabbos. So Rav Ashi says we don't need to be that fancy. Here's what happened. I took a wallet, I'm dragged it outside, but when I crossed the threshold, instead of just bringing it outside, in other words, it's a Rishus Rabim immediately outside, but instead of just simply dragging it out to Rishus Rabim, I have my hand tucked underneath, and I scoop it into my hand as it crosses over the threshold. And now, two things have just been accomplished simultaneously. I, A, move something from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, and B, it's a Rishus Rabim, but I made a kinyan because I brought it into my hand. The Amar Rava. In fact, Rava says, Yado shel Adam chashuv lo ka'arba al-arba'a. In fact, what is your hand considered? Your hand is considered a domain. A domain requires an area of 4x4 tefachim. Your hand is not 4x4 tefachim. In fact, your hand by definition is one tefach. But in terms of giving status, your hand has a status of dalal al dalal, meaning it's a domain. It's a reshus b'fnei atzma. So if I took an item and I brought it into my hand, so now I've taken the item and I've done two things at the same time. Brought it out to the reshus harabim, so check for, you know what I mean. Check for Shabbos, that was chilul Shabbos, and what else did I do? I also stole, all at the same time. So the Gemara says, Rav Achi masni hachi, Ravina masni la'olam da'afke l'reshus harabim, u'reshus harabim namikana. So the Gemara points out that Amoraim disagree in terms of how to properly explain the Braisa. Either one, Rav Acha says just what we said, that your hand was there at the other end of the threshold to receive the item. Ravina says, no, you brought out to Rishos Rabim, and you could be Kona in a Rishos Rabim. And now the Gemara points out, can I make a kinyan in Rishos Rabim? So the Gemara says, based on the Mishnah Baba Kama, we could debate this very point as to whether or not a person can make a kinyan in Rishos Rabim. Hayim Oshchav Yotzei Omeis Rishos Baalim Pater Higbi Oshi Yitzim Rishos Baalim Meis Chayav. So the Mishnah in Baba Kama talks about when does your liability begin? Meaning you, the person who is entrusted with this item. So when exactly, at what point precisely does your liability begin? So if you drag the item out and it dies on the property of its owner, so you haven't accepted liability yet. If you lift it or you actually removed it from the reshus of the owner and the animal dies, so now you are on the hook. You begin your liability. The Mishnah Baba Kama over there is talking about a ganav. Okay, it's the seventh parak of Baba Kama. Anyway, Ravina daik mereisha, Rav Acha daik miseifa. So where's that key line in the Mishnah? The Gemara says exactly, that's exactly the point. We could debate where exactly the key line of that Mishnah is. Ravina daik mereisha. Ravina says, look at the beginning of that Mishnah. Hayam moshcha v'yotzei umeis b'rishos balan poter. You're dragging it out. And it dies. And when does it die? Before you cross the threshold of the house of the owner. So you're going to be exempt. Time of the Meis Bereshus Balim. How would the Bereshus Balim? Or Meis Chayev. So what does that mean? That means that once I cross the threshold, so that now I've assumed full liability for the item, and once it crosses the threshold, that's it. It's mine. Mine meaning, but keep in mind, I'm talking about a ganav. Mine meaning, I have now full liability once it crosses the threshold. So what do you see from there? That the moment it crosses the threshold, you're chayav. Rav Acha daig miseifa higbo shotzia otzia. I'm sorry. So Rav Acha says, let's take a look at the end of that Mishnah. The Mishnah says, either I am magbia it, or I take it out. Now, if I pick an item up, what do? I brought it into my domain. Meaning, I made a Maisa Kinyan by Hagbah, by picking it up. It's got to be the same. It's not enough just to simply move it from one domain to another. I have to move it to my domain. Meaning, bring it into my hand, or do something analogous to that. So, this question of whether a person can make a kinyan of Rishos Rabim, so Gemara says, you see that Mishnah Baba Kama, you can argue one of two ways. And it's just a question of what you're focusing on. Are you focusing on the first half of that Mishnah or the second half of the Mishnah? Li Rav Acha Kasha Reisha, Li Ravina Kasha Seifa. The Gemara points out, good. I understand it's a question of what you're focusing on, but you can't ignore the other half of the Mishnah. What is each Amara going to do with the other half of the Mishnah? So Reisha Rav Acha lo kasha kama delo asi l'rishus l'rishus balim karina bay. So as far as Rav Acha is concerned, he says, look, the first half of the Mishnah, not a problem. Meaning, yeah, the first half of the Mishnah talks about dragging it out of his possession. But as long as you haven't yet brought it into your possession, it's considered like it's still in the owner's possession. And say for the Ravina Lokasha, and as far as Ravina is concerned, not a difficulty. Meaning that the focus on the second half of the Braisa, or I should say Mishnah, is based on a diuk, meaning 2 points were made in that second half of the Braisa. Hotzah and Hagbah. And you made an assumption that, well, just like Hagbah means you bring it into your hand, Hotzah means that you bring it into your hand. That's an assumption. The Mishnah doesn't say that. We don't have to necessarily conclude that way. So that's what Ravina would say regarding the second half of the Mishnah. Okay, so can you make a kinyan in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? End of the sugya, machlokas amarayim, whether you can or you cannot. Based on that, how do you explain the Mishnah about dragging the wallet out of the house? So either you accept the idea that you can make a kinyan Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and then the Mishnah can be read kipshuto, or you don't accept the idea of, well, you can make a kinyan Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and then you could talk about how either A, you're dragging it out to tzid Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and we're going to have to give that fancy pshat that we gave earlier, or B, is that on the other side of the threshold, you bring the item right into your hand, and that's another way to explain the Mishnah about dragging the wallet. Okay.
Which one do you accept? Can you make a kinyan in Rosh
Hashanah Rabbim? That's an excellent question. I'm not sure.
The idea of the four amot doesn't work.
No, the hand for sure works.
The hand for sure
works. Right. This machlokes samaraim. I don't know how to conclude. Habala Chosav al Chosaviv. We go back to our Mishnah. And
you have that idea in the Tumah of Shabbat, and you put your food in the four amot area.
Like that's different. That's a different set of suit. No.
You make a kinyan over there?
Yeah, you do, but you're making a kinyan on a, it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it's just an area.
Area of yours that if you right?
Yeah.
If you move something in that area or bring it there.
It's not the same. Now, here we're talking about, that's King and Shvisa that's talking about acquiring a location. Here we're talking about taking someone else's item, which belonged to somebody else, and now making it yours. And at what point exactly does that transfer occur?
Yeah.
Right. Again, similar idea, but again, we're talking about making a transfer of property. It's whatever. Okay. Not exactly the same. Let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah talked about a man who is ma'anes a woman, and our Mishnah says that despite the fact that he can't marry her, somebody has to pay. Okay, that's the point our Mishnah made. Here's the problem. The Gemara is going to spell out a small problem, and this really is going to be the entirety of today's daf. Today's daf is daf Lamed Beis, and the problem is that we have a Mishnah Makos. Mishnah Makos describes more or less the same scenario, and by the way, I say more or less, really it's from the wording of the Mishnah, it's identical, same scenario. And what does the Mishnah say over there in Malchus? You're going to get Malchus. And here's the problem. And the problem is very simple. We know that in Halacha, you either are going to pay or you're going to get Malchus. But you cannot get both. This is very similar, Kamlei Midrabba Minei. But as you'll see in just a moment, it's going to be a little bit trickier for one simple reason. In Kamlei Midrabba Minei, we say that if there's a more harsh and more serious penalty, and there's a lighter one, so you go with the harsher, not the lighter one. Okay. When it comes to money or malchus, which one's the harsher and which one's the lighter? Mm-hmm. Okay, we could sit here and we can argue. Now, we're not going to do that right now because the Gemara is going to do that for us. So we don't have to go back and forth on this issue, but the Gemara says we don't know. But here's something we do know. It's not both. It cannot be both. So based on the fact that it cannot be both, so I have just a very simple question. Our Mishnah says you're going to pay. The Mishnah Malchus says that you're going to get subject to malchus, which kind of makes sense because that's the Mishnah Makos, right? It's focusing on Makos. So
the Makos doesn't help the victim.
Huh? Oh, stay tuned. That's a good argument, and I'm going to address the Gemara is going to address that argument later on. Okay? So which one are you going to receive? So unclear. So that's the problem. Our Mishnah talks about money, monetary payment. The Mishnah Makos talks about getting Makos. You know you can't get both. And so what do you do with that? And that's going to be the rest of today's daf. And on the, and on this, by the way, just to organize today's daf, are basically going to be two approaches to the how to explain this problem. Lamed Beis Amud Aleph is dedicated to Ula's approach. Lamed Beis Amud Beis that is dedicated to Rav Yochanan's approach. And that is structurally the entire daf today. Let's all see it inside now. The Gemara says, but I'm going to challenge Elohein Alokin. Mishnah and Makos. Haba al achosav achosaviv achosima v'achosishto. Person has relations with his sister. His father's sister, meaning his aunt. His mother's sister, another version of an aunt. Al achosishto, his wife's sister. Al eisha sachiv, his wife's... Sorry. His sister-in-law. I mean, they're both sister-in-laws, right? Achos Ishto is his wife's sister, and Ashes Achiv, his brother-in-law's wife. His brother's wife. Val Ashes Achi Aviv is the wife of his uncle. Okay, again, another version of an aunt. Al Anida, or someone has relations with Anida. So all these cases you're going to receive, says the Mishnah Makos. Makos. Okay. The Kaimalan, and the Gemara asked the question very succinctly, ain't a look at Mishalim. You don't get both. You cannot get both. So which Mishnah is right? Are you going to get Makos like the Mishnah Makos describes? Or do you have to pay like our Mishnah describes? It's hard to imagine. You're going to get both. Not hard. Impossible. In fact, take a look at the Rashi on the bottom of Lamed Alpha Mid Beis. Rashi says, how do I know that? That you can't get both? Because we're going to see later on. Rashi's quoting the Gemara later on. The Pasuk says, Kedei Rishoso. You give him towards his wickedness. And you only give him one punishment, but you don't give a person two punishments. And so therefore, what we're going to have to figure out is how to resolve these two Mishnayos, which one is it, and in the discussion we're also going to see which one becomes the default first punishment that you're going to give him. Meaning, we have two Mishnayos that we need to resolve, because you can't do both. It's going to be one of the two. We're going to figure out which one it is. And in doing so, we're also going to figure out which one becomes the default punishment, if in fact there's an option of either Makos or Mammon. So we start off with the first side of today's daf, and the first side of this question, and that is Amar Ula. Amar Ula lokashin kamba chosa nara kamba chosa bogeris. Okay, our Mishnah is talking about a nara. Now this is the part that the Mishnah were not clear about. Not perfectly true. Our Mishnah is pretty clear that it's talking about a nara. And I know that because the Mishnah starts off with the words, Elo Naros. Okay, so good indication that our Mishnah is talking about a nara. The Mishnah Makos does not say. The Mishnah just simply says that you had relations with one of these women. But it doesn't describe at what developmental stage these women are in. So Ula says that our Mishnah is talking about a Nara, and the Mishnah over there, Makos, is talking about where it's not dealing with a Nara. We know, we said this from day one of the Perek, that the Kenas that the Torah imposes upon the Ma'anes is only when he's Ma'anes a Nara. But once she's above the age of Nara, so then there's no Kenas. So what Ula is now suggesting is that the Mishnah Makos is talking about where there's no Kenas. So the Gemara says that's an incomplete answer. So the Gemara says, "Kambachosanar, kambachosabogeres, achosabogeres, nami, haika boshesupagam." So the Gemara says, "I am not following. It's true that once a woman is beyond the age of nara, there's no kenas. But as we also said from the beginning of the parak, but still, that doesn't mean that the ma'anis is totally off the hook. He has to pay the compensatory damages. The only thing he doesn't pay after she turns a nara is only kenas, only the punitive fine of 50 shkalim." But he still has to pay the regular compensatory damages, boshes and pagam. Now, there's another one as well. There's what's called sa'ar, which we're going to come back to in just a moment. The Gemara is about to ask that. But let's just quickly explain. Pagam, that's the actual depreciated value of the woman, now that she's no longer basula. Boshes is the embarrassment she has to suffer. And there are other payments as well, which we're going to get to in just a moment. But the Gemara is saying, Ula's answer is incomplete. The Mishnah and Makos, even if she's beyond the age of Nara, still is subject to receive payment. So, once again, Kedei Rishoso. You only give one punishment. Either it's money or it's Makos. It's not both. How do we know that? How do we know the Mishnah and Makos is siding with Makos as opposed to monetary payment? So the Gemara says, Bishota. So the Gemara says, well, the Mishnah over there is talking about where the sister in question also was a Shota. She did not have her mental faculty. She didn't have her mental faculty. Rashi says, Ein la boshes, v'damma munkor b'shuk nami ein la. So Rashi says that there's no monetary payment. There's no busha for the Shota. She does not experience busha, and also there's no depreciated value for her. There's no actual value that is being lost for her. So the Gemara says, "Vayiketzaros." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but still that doesn't help because there's another payment which doesn't get waived in the case of shota. That's tsar. She experiences pain." So the Gemara says, "Bim mefuta." So the Gemara says, "Okay." You're right. The answer that we're proposing right now is incomplete. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to change gears. The Mishnah in Makos is talking about where she used to seduce her, meaning that ultimately she willingly agreed to the act of relations. And as Rashi points out over here, Mefuta Ein La Tzar. So Rashi says that once she agrees, so then there's no longer any pain. We're going to see that later in our parak. Okay, it's one of the assumptions that we're going to be talking about, that the Gemara is going to mention later on, is that there's no longer any pain. So So the Gemara says, okay, now that we're here, now that we're saying that the Mishnah Makos is not talking about ones, it's talking about mefate, and once we're there, so then we can scale back a little bit on that Mishnah Makos. We could say the Mishnah Makos is talking about a nara. Normally a nara is going to receive a knas, and as we pointed out again from the beginning of the parak, it's not the nara who's receiving knas, it's the father of the nara receiving the knas. But we could be describing how there's no longer a father in the picture. Father's dead. And so she's a yesoma, and so under such circumstances, she is going to, and because it's pitui, because ultimately she agrees, so therefore there is, she waives everything. She's mochel everything, all the payments. And that would be what the Mishnah Makos is telling us. Okay, what do we get from Ula? Alma kasever Ula, kol hecha di'ika mamana makos, mamana mishalem, milka lolaki. Okay. So that means as follows. What's your default? Meaning, if there are two punishments in the hopper, one is that you're going to have to pay and one is that you're going to get malchus. Which one becomes the default? Answer is money. Meaning, what do we do with that Mishnah Makos? That Mishnah Makos, we talked about she was a shota. We talked about how she was, it was pitui. We talked about how there was no father. What do we do with that Mishnah Makos? We tried our best and successfully, eventually, to remove all financial obligation. After you remove all financial obligation, then there's going to be malchus. That means, of course, that if you don't remove all financial obligation, what's there? Money. You pay money before you get malchus. So the Gemara says.
You remove the...
Because once it's pitui, so then that's she's mocha.
What is pagam? That she loses value.
She lost her depreciative value. No, pagam doesn't mean.
Doesn't sound like a, no, boishes she doesn't have because she's
No, in the Gemara's final approach, it was pitui. There's no father. She's mocha. She's mocha all
everything.
She's mochel.
But there's no kamoi in that mission.
All that's left now is malchus, which means then that if there's money, so money becomes the punishment or the first punishment that the person's going to be subject to. So Ula's teaching us basically that when there's money and there's malchus and both of them are in the hopper, so money's going to trump malchus. And the only reason why the Mishnah Makos is talking about Makos is because it's talking about a specific case where there was no monetary payment, and that's why we're back to Makos. Good. That's what Ula is teaching us. Question of the Gemara, Minale Le'ulaha. How do you know that? Meaning, the Mishnah, we have a Mishnah Makos, we have a Mishnah Ksuvos. One says money, the other says Makos. We don't know from the Mishnah which one takes precedence. How does Ula know that money comes in front of Makos? Where's the source of that? So the Gemara says, we learn it from Chavala. A person hits another person. Because when you assault somebody and you damage somebody, so there are two things in the hopper. You're on the hook for all compensatory damages and hit another human being. Hitting another human being is a law in the Torah. How do we know it's a law in the Torah? Rashi quotes the Pasuk. The Torah says that when Beis Din gives malchus to somebody and they're, let's say they got to the maximum number of malchus, 39. The Torah says that if the shluchei beis din give one more than 39, they violated a law in the Torah. What law in the Torah did they violate? Hitting somebody. No, let it hit somebody. So, it's a negative prohibition. And so, by Chavala, what does the Torah go out of its way to say? That when you hit somebody, what do? You pay damages. Even though there are two punishments in the hopper. One is money and the other one is Malkus. Yet you're going to give money over Malkus. So the Gemara says, and what does that create for us? What's called the Binyan Av. It is a precedent that any time that there are two punishments in the hopper, Mammon and Malkus, so you're going to go with Mammon over Malkus, we learn it from Chavala. So the Gemara says, let's slow down. First of all, Chavala, it's not one monetary payment that you have to make. There are five different compensatory payments that one needs to make every time he damages another person. Eighth parak of Baba Kama, the Mishnah, first Mishnah over there, details how when somebody harms another person, he's got to make five different damages. You can't create a binyan av from Chavala because it's not one monetary obligation against Malkus. It's five different monetary obligations against Malkus. So it's true in Chavala, you go with the money over the Malkus. But what's not true is, I can't create a binyanav. I can't create a precedence. The imamona lekula, and the Gemara says, and also, let's gather ourselves over here. What's at the core of this question right now? What's at the core of the question is that there are two punishments. Which one is more severe? That's what we're trying to figure out. In other words, the man who is ma'anis a woman, man is a mafata woman, a man is chovel another person. What really is at the core of this entire discussion is money more severe or is malchus more severe? And what we're trying to say is that whatever one is the more severe one, that's the one you're going to give. Because basically we're trying to use a model of kamle b'derabimine. You give the greater of the two. The Gemara says, you know what? I can even make the argument over here that in Chavala, money is not the more severe. Money is a lighter one. Money is a lighter punishment. And I'm still going to opt with money over Malkus. Shekein hutu mechala beveizdin. Because, first of all, when it comes to hitting another person, Chavala, you know, Chavala is an issur in the Torah. And like all issurim in the Torah, obviously, we shouldn't do it. Torah says it's prohibited. So, but when it comes to hitting another person, there are leniencies in hitting another person, notably what we just talked about a moment ago. Beis Din, if somebody's Chayv Malkus, Beis Din is allowed to / supposed to hit another person. So you see that in the world of Chavala, there are leniencies in Chavala. And now, Hedy, let's get to your point, which you raised earlier, and that is, and we can add another layer to this entire discussion. Meaning the Gemara says, look, money really could be the lighter of the two punishments over that of Malkus. But what if we went with Malkus over money? What's going to happen is that somebody, there's in hurting another person, there's somebody else in the equation. Meaning there's a Chovel and there's a Nechbal. There's a person who got hurt. So from his perspective, if you were to ask him, what would you prefer? Would you prefer him, the assailant, getting hit? Or would you prefer him giving you compensatory damages? Okay, there are... right. Correct. I guess there's not going to be one universal answer to that question, but generally speaking, and I'll speak on behalf of myself, I'd rather get compensated than seeing somebody else get hit. I mean, how does it help me that he gets hit? All right, and I understand.
Anyway, against revenge.
Huh?
You have a law in the Torah against revenge.
Okay, that's true, but in other words, you're entitled to that money. In other words, you're not. It's not revenge. It's okay. Oh, you're saying if he gets Malkus, right? You're correct. Then they're right. Then they're right. Then you're seeking revenge. Okay, good. Very good point.
Is that the same as eye for eye?
Right. Correct. In other words, the point that we can add to this discussion, Tosos does. The point that we can add to the discussion is that even if money is a lighter punishment, but money's still preferred because the Nechbal is going to get paid back, as opposed to the case of Malkus, where the Nechbal is not going to benefit at all and receive any type of retribution for the damages that he suffered. Okay. So, we're stuck now. We asked the question, Ula, how do you know? Meaning, you're right. In the case of Chavala, the money's going to go in front of Malkus. Fine. But a binyan av. But how do you know? What sets the precedent for every other area in halacha where if there's money and there's malchus, we're going to go with money over malchus? How do you know? So the Gemara says, Ala gamar mi edim zomimim. So the Gemara says, okay, we'll go to another case in the Torah where we see that money goes in front of malchus. Ma edim zomimim dika mamano malchus, mamano mashalim milka lolaki. Avkal hecha dika mamano malchus, mamano mashalim milka lolaki. So edim zomimim. Again, we're back in Masechta Makos. It's the first parak of Masechta Makos, where the Torah tells us, the Mishnah has explained over there, that if two witnesses come forward and say, you know, Reuven owes Shimon money. And we know that because we saw the loan, we saw the origination of the loan, we were there at the time, two new witnesses come in and say, what are you talking about? You were where at that time? You weren't there. You were with us at the time. And the second set of witnesses says, Imanu ayinum ayisa mamakum ploni. You were with us at the time. There's no way that you could have testified. Chiddush HaTorah. We believe the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. And another Chiddush HaTorah. What happens to the first set of witnesses? Vasisa lam kasher zamam lasos lachiv. You do to them what they intended, what they conspired to do to their friend. So, what they wanted to do is have, right, extract money from Shimon back to Reuven, or Reuven to Shimon, whichever case I constructed, I forgot. But in other words, so what we do to the Edom Zomimim is, you're not going to have to pay. Now, as Edom Zomimim, in addition to being Edom Zomimim, what else are they? They're liars, right? They testified falsely in a court of law. So what normally happens to Edom who give false testimony in court? Subject to Malkus. So now, Edom Zomimim, which one are they going to receive? Are they going to receive the monetary payment or are they going to receive the Malkus? Answer, they're going to receive the Malkus. Ula says, sorry, that's not the answer. I spoke incorrectly. The answer is they're going to pay the money. So Ula says, what do you see over here? That it's the case of Mammon and Malkus. So Mammon comes in front of Malkus. You see that by Edom Zomimim, which will set the stage for a binyanav. So the Gemara says, Malin Zomimim, Shekain Einam Srichem Hasra. The Gemara says, Edom Zomimim being a binyanav can't be. Edom Zomimim are going to get punished even if they don't receive a warning, which is totally atypical in halacha. So it's a strange halacha. You cannot serve as a base, as a model for all other halachas in the Torah. And once again, the Gemara says, and let's also cut into the core of this entire discussion. Money may be, in fact, more lenient. But the reason why we're going to opt with money is loasa maisa. They didn't do anything, meaning they just spoke. Speaking is not an action. It's wrong, but it doesn't fall into the category of action. When do you normally get malchus? When you do an action, not with speech. And so that's why we're going to go with money over malchus. But it doesn't teach us what is, generally speaking, the harsher of the two punishments, whether money or malchus is the harsher of the two. So the Gemara says, okay, so what have we tried to do? Ula says that when you have two punishments on the hopper, money and malchus, money goes first, in general. How did he know that? So we try to create a binyan from Chavalah, fail. Try to create a binyan from Edom Zomimim, fail. You know what the next step of the Gemara is? Okay, so the Gemara is, this is textbook. So the Gemara says, so Ela Gamar Mitarvayu. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're not going to be able to learn from each one independently. Let's create a binyan av mishtik suvim, right? It's sada shava, common denominator. Matzada shava shabam dika mamana makos mamana mashal milka lolaki av kol hecha dika mamana makos mamana mashal milka lolaki. So the Gemara says, so let's create a binyan av mishtik suvim. Look at the common denominator. Here we have two cases in the Torah where there's mamon and there's makos, and what's happening? Mamon. So the Gemara says, malatzada shava shabam shaken yesh bam sad chamor. So the Gemara says, once again, even between the two, even if I'm looking at the common denominator, there's still a tzad chamur. There's still a stringency in both of these cases. Let's review. In the case of Chavala, the stringency is 5 payments. In the case of Edom Zomimim, the stringency is no warning. So even if I'm looking at the two, and even if I'm putting the two together, I can't arrive at a precedent. And again, we could also make the same point that we made earlier. Money really could be the lighter of the two penalties. And we'll just simply say that in both cases we're going to opt with money for the reasons that we gave earlier. Ela Ula, so now on the top, Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis. So that was a lot of attempt and not a lot of success. The Gemara says, how does Ula know that money comes in front of Malkus? Tachas Gamar. I'm sorry, Gamar. So he learns it out through Xerah Shava. Top Rashi in the Almud. What does that help us? How did that benefit us? Xerah Shava Mufnehi Ulameidu Meimashivim. Once we have Xerah Shava, and Rashi points out it's Xerah Shava which is bonded. It's double bonded, in fact. If anyone remembers their chemistry days, which means that each word is an extraneous word, and so we have now Xerah Shava, which is Mufna. So we know that even if you have questions that you can ask, even if it's not logical, still the Xerah Shava is going to teach us the Salacha. Sivhacha Tachas Asherina, regarding the case of Ones, the pasuk says Tachas Asherina, that you pay the Knas payment in lieu of the fact that you violated her. It says regarding the payments of Chavala, eye for an eye. Now we know eye for an eye does not mean eye for an eye. Again, go back to the 8th parak of Baba Kama. A lot of 8th parak of Baba Kama today. 8th parak of Baba Kama spends, if I remember correctly, about 2 blad of Gemara telling us that Ayin Tachasayin means money, monetary payment. Ayin Tachasayin, Mahasim Amonim Mishalim Milkalolaki. So Af Kol Hecha. The Ika Mamona Omakus Mamona Mishal Mikololaki. Okay, question of whether or not it applies to everything or just to the Gzer Shava just applies to Ones. Either way, point is that what Ula arrives at is the Gzer Shava. Okay, period.
Could have made a difference between Edison and in the case of the Chavola, because Chavola, the guy got injured, so he gets compensation. In case of Edison,
very good point.
You know,
yeah, I hear you.
He tried to extract money,
but he didn't.
He didn't lose anything.
He didn't
he
actually.
Gain by being paid.
Okay, good, very good point.
Right?
But Edison is a chidush.
Yeah, okay, good.
I'm saying, but the guy's going to make money.
Good. I hear you. I think it's an excellent point. Okay. We are now up to approach number 2 of the Gemara. And this is the second half of today's daf, and that is now Rabbi Yochanan. So again, our question that we're dealing with, such a basic question, and that is that we know that given the choice of 2 punishments, when the person is looking at 2 punishments, so you're only going to receive 1 of the 2. That we know. Good. That's rule number 1. Now rule number 2, which is open for debate, is if the 2 punishments are money and malchus, so which one is the default? Which one do we turn to first? Is it money or is it malchus? So Ula's answer to that question is money. How did Ula arrive at that conclusion? So the Gemara spent a good amount of time trying to understand. How did Ula arrive at that conclusion? And ultimately the Gemara resolved it by saying it's Xerah Shava. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilo Teima Achoso Nara Kancha Hisruba Kancha Lo Hisruba. Rabbi Yochanan says again, let's start again from the beginning of today's daf. Let's take the Mishnah Makos, let's take the Mishnah Ksuvah, let's put them side by side. The Mishnah Ksuvah says that when a man's Ma'anis a woman, he has to pay. The Mishnah Makos says that when a man's Ma'anis a woman, he's going to get Makos. So, which one is our default? So Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll tell you, it's very simple. The Mishnah in Makos is talking about where there was a warning. 2 witnesses were standing alongside the man and said to the man, look, we know what you want to do. You're not allowed to do that. The Torah says it's prohibited. And if you do that, you're going to get malchus. The Torah says don't do it. It's a law in the Torah. Don't do it. And if you do it, you're going to get malchus. So they received a proper warning. Afal pi kein, the person's Yetzirah got the best of him. He did it anyway. So what's the halacha? The halacha is, says Rav Yochanan, you're going to get malchus. Now it's true that there's a financial payment he's also on the hook for, he's also liable for. Rav Yochanan's going to argue, I know, but you're only going to get 1 punishment, and Rav Yochanan says Malchus comes in front of money. Our Mishnah here in Ksuvos is talking about where there was no Hasra. There was no warning. And because there was no warning, so now there's no Malchus. So now there's no Malchus. So now we go to Mammon. But given that there are 2 punishments of Malchus and Mammon, you go with Malchus over Mammon. Afilu Hisrubo Amakasa, I'm sorry. Afilu Tema, I'm just going to read it again. Afilu Tema Choso Nara Kancha Hisrubo Kanchalo Hisrubo. Amakasa Rav Yochanan. So what is Rav Yochanan teaching us? Kohechadika Mammon and Malchus Vasru Bay. If there's Mammon and Malchus and there was a warning, Milke Laki Mammona Lo Mishalim. So you're going to get Malchus, but you're not going to pay. Minale Rav Yochanan Ha. Now the Gemara says, now how does Rav Yochanan know this? It's funny. When Ula said his position, the Gemara said, and how did Ula know this? Then the Gemara resolved. Now Rav Yochanan says, you know, Malchus, over money, the Gemara objects also. At one point, meaning one of these 2 positions should be more intuitive. And I'm not saying which one, because I don't know. And obviously the Amoraim are arguing it. But like to each of the points, the Gemara says, well, how did you arrive at that conclusion? And we're just simply pointing out one of them has got to be the more intuitive position. But anyway, okay, so Rav Yochanan says, I'll tell you how I know it. The pasuk that says that you only get one of two punishments, that's the pasuk in Parshas Ki Tse'etse. And it happens to be that if you look contextually over there, what do you see? Usmich lei arba'im yakenu. So the Torah says over there that you give malchus. So in other words, it's a juxtaposition. Smichus aparshios. We have one pasuk saying you get one of the two. The next pasuk says you give a malchus. Oh, okay. So if it's one of the two and the two options are malchus and mammon, so you give one of the two. Which one do you do? So some you just go to the next pasuk. Pasuk says you give malchus. So the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan, I'm going to ask such a simple question against your position, and that is the first part of today's daf. What do we learn? You hit somebody, you cause financial damage by hitting him. You're on the hook monetarily. You're also chayv malchus. Which punishment do you receive?
You pay.
Rav Yochanan, how did you understand that? So, and the Gemara now struggles, and the Gemara says, well, maybe that's talking about a case where he received a warning. Where he didn't receive a warning. But had to receive the warning, so then the Chovel doesn't pay, but rather just receives Malkus. The Gemara says, but that's not true. And not only is that not true, Rav Yochanan teaches us otherwise. Let's say I hit somebody, but I don't cause any damage. Or not enough of a shavapruta. So in other words, there's no financial significant financial loss to that person. Good. So what just happened now? You hit somebody. You just violated a law in the Torah. So what are you? And there's no financial obligation. So what are you going to do? You're going to get malchus. So hey chidam, idol asra bay amai loke. Now can't be that there was no warning, because if there was no warning, you're not getting malchus. Elipshita da asra bay. Obviously, you got a warning. And what relieves you from paying? The fact that you didn't create enough financial damage. But if you did create enough financial damage, so you're gonna pay, and you're not gonna get malchus. So Rav Yochanan, you always default to malchus over money. So how do you understand the halacha of chavala? Such a simple question. But with a simple question, there was going to come a simple answer. So the Gemara says, because the Torah says so. Meaning, exception to the rule. Rav Yochanan tells you, the rule is malchus over money, and with every rule, there are exceptions. And we're going to see tomorrow two exceptions to the rule. One is going to be Edom Zomimim, the second is going to be Chavala. So those are the two exceptions to the rule. And basically what Rav Yochanan will tell you is, okay, those are the exceptions, but the rule is Malkus. Okay, let's summarize today's daf. It's very easy to summarize. It's a very structured and organized daf. We have a question of a Mishnah here in Ksuvos that tells us that when a man's ma'anis a woman, he has to pay her kanas. We have a Mishnah in Malkus that says that when a man is ma'anis a woman, he's prohibited to, he's going to receive Malkus. How do I take these two Mishnahs and put them side by side, considering the fact that the rule is that you only receive one of the two punishments? Which punishment are you receiving? Is it going to be the Malkus or is it going to be the Mammon? Which Mishnah is correct? So we have two different approaches, Ula and Rav Yochanan. Ula will tell us that the Mishnah in, our Mishnah that says that you're going to pay is the default Mishnah, meaning payment comes in front of Malkus. Well, how do you understand the Mishnah Malkus? Well, there was just simply no payment. And we had a whole bunch of ukimtas. How did Ula know that answer? How did he arrive at that conclusion? Answer, final answer of the Gemara, Gzeir Shava. Then we have Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says, no, the default is always going to be Malkus. Malkus comes in front of Mammon. How does he know that? Smichus Parshios. What about the halacha of Chavala? What about the halacha of Edom Zomimim? Exception to the rule.